It's HBR, All Things Considered, and I'm Dave Lawrence. We are welcoming back a guest we've had on the show a few times, a major rock artist who has a strong local connection, lives on Kauai, and has shows tomorrow and Sunday night, 8 o'clock each night at the Blue Note Hawaii, where he is making his debut. It's Todd Rundgren joining us now. Hey, Todd, thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
Doing this thing that has been billed as the unpredictable tour. What is in store for fans? What can you predict?
The way it works is we've got a list of about 80 songs that we can play from memory, and I give the band the first song, and then after that, I just start calling out tunes depending on my mood and the sense that I get from the audience of where they'd like to go, and 2 hours later, we're finished.
Describe the band that you're toting along with you.
My usual band of minstrels, it's Prairie Prince on drums, Chasm Sultan on the bass, Jesse Gress on guitar, and Greg Hawks on keyboards.
Some of those cats are the cats that you played alongside in when, and I don't know if a lot of people might remember, when you briefly did the New Cars, right? Some of those names are familiar, certainly Greg. And
yeah, we're like four-fifths of the New Cars.
Right, exactly.
As a matter of fact, the only one who isn't on stage is Elliot Easton.
You still work in the Ringo Starr's All-Star gig? That was the last time that you were in Honolulu, right? Election night, 2016, that fabled evening.
Yeah, the horror. Actually, that was pretty much near the end.
Are you still working with Ringo?
I'm no longer a regular All-Star. I was replaced by Colin Hay from Men at Work, and Richard Page was also replaced by somebody else. I'm trying to remember exactly who.
Well, it doesn't matter. Now that you're not in the band, we don't care, Todd.
That's... We just don't care anymore. It was actually fine with me. After 5 years, I'd had enough of playing the same set every single night. For me, that starts to drive me crazy.
I can imagine. Even if it's your favorite band, when you're like, all right, after 3 nights of this, I don't think I can take another one.
Let alone 5 years.
Right. Exactly. One time I talked to you when it was part of that tour, and you talked a little bit about how the Beatles connected to your youth. But in general, one thing we never got into was your very first band, the Naz. The first gig... We just had John McLaughlin on, and he was talking about Mahavishnu's very first gig was opening for John Lee Hooker. And I'm looking at your thing. I know, right? That's pretty ballsy. Your first gig with Naz, unless I'm reading it wrong, was opening for the Doors?
Yeah, that was before we even got signed. The Doors were playing, like, Town Hall in Philadelphia. We were the hot local band, so we got to open up for them. I think we did all kinds of ridiculous things like throwing fruit into the audience, anything to get attention. And then the Doors came on, and I was kind of into the Doors, but I thought Jim Morrison was kind of weird, especially when he fell down dead on the stage and just laid there for like 5 minutes.
And did you get to interact with him at all, or was that one of those things where not really?
Not really. They were West Coast, and we were East Coast. You know, it was like the Sharks and the Jets.
Oil and water.
Yeah.
About the...
In some ways. Our influences were like The Who and The Yardbirds, all bands from England. That whole sort of UCLA poetry scene didn't mean much to us.
You got to do a lot of production of other people. Some of these credits here, Grand Funk Railroad, were an American band. How did you end up getting that gig?
Well, it was at a transitional point for the band. They had previously been managed and produced by a guy named Terry Knight. He was a good manager in that he got them lots of publicity. At one point, they had the biggest billboard that had ever been at Times Square. But he was a terrible record producer. And so the band didn't get a lot of respect for their records, and they were looking to change that. So they had new management. Management knew that I was into production, and I was kind of hot at the time. So they put us together, and the end result was we're an American band, which was a record that produced the top 10 single,
right.
And that's what the band wanted. So,
and what made you hot? Like, when did you first, what were some of the first ones you did, and how did you make that transition yourself of doing production instead of just making your own tunes?
Well, when the Naz broke up, I wasn't interested in repeating that. Never adapted to the politics of being in a band. I didn't have that sort of, you know, exhibitionistic streak that makes you want to be a front man. So I decided I would get into record production instead. It allowed me to still be associated with the music, but I wouldn't have to deal with being in a band and going on the road and all that other stuff. So I guess the first big thing that I did was stage fright after I had engineered the Jesse Winchester album for Bearsville, and that was produced by Robbie Robertson. And they liked what I did on that, so they asked me to run the board for stage fright.
The band we're talking about.
Yeah, the band. And the band were the biggest band in the world at that point, so that elevated my name right away. And I think the next important thing that happened after that was maybe Badfinger. And they had two hit singles off of it. As a result, everybody started to think of me as like this whiz kid who could solve all your problems.
And finally, before we wrap it up, one of the other names in that era, and I know that you did some sessions and then somebody else ended up doing what would be the record, but your resume includes getting to work with Janis Joplin.
Well, I got sent out after Janis had left essentially Big Brother, and she signed as an artist with Albert Grossman, who was also my manager. And so he decided to send me out to Marin County, where she was living, and try and supervise the process of putting a band together and selecting material for the first record. I had never sort of worked with an artist like Janis before. I mean, there are people who are apprehensive of the studio. They get nervous when they get in the studio. But I get the sense that Janis just didn't really like being in the studio. She didn't have an audience to respond to what she was doing. She kind of depended on that to guide her. So it was a very difficult process trying to get her to focus on that part. The details were not what interested her. She just wanted to find a song she liked and sing it. At some point, someone in the Albert Grossman office who was in publishing and writing songs or something said, okay, I got the song, and we're going to make Janis do it. And we're going to make Todd produce it, and we're going to make the Butterfield Band be essentially the backup. It was this weird one-off kind of edict that came down from the Bearsville offices, like right in the middle of the process of trying to put together her band and get ready to do an album. We did one session, and the session was, you know, we got through it, but it was kind of lackluster for all the reasons that I've articulated, you know, the fact that Janis is not comfortable in the studio.
Right.
As it turned out, I didn't do what was necessary to make her comfortable because I was not used to having to focus more psychologically on the artist than musically. Most everything else was musical challenges.
What was that song?
And it was called One Night Stand.
Okay.
So the session, we went through the first obligatory 3 hours, and then nobody seemed very excited about it, so we just essentially called it after that.
No good memories, no funny stories with her.
Well, I mean, funny, like strange, like the process of, you know, reviewing the songs and putting the band together involved, you know, like every sort of famous songwriter of the time coming through her house in Marin to show the band the song and hopefully show her the song. John Hall and Nick Gravanites and all these other blues and folk people and others who would write songs appropriate for her. And then one day we get a call on the phone, and it's Janis, and she says, sorry, I can't be there right now. I'm at the police station dealing with something, blah, 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 blah. 5 minutes later, I walk by her bedroom door, and the bedroom door is open, and she's in bed. She's called from her own bedroom to say that she was at the police station and couldn't make it to the session. I think that's how much, you know, she just wasn't comfortable with the process.
That's a great story. That's a high quality one. I don't think we can get a better one out of you on that session.
No, I don't think so.
It's Todd Rundgren. He's doing a couple of nights at the Blue Note. We're really stoked, and thanks for doing this. We really appreciate it, brother.
My pleasure. Thank you.